now we get to the hard part, right? I don't mean my topic. I mean the wonderful spaghetti, the bread, all the starches, and the sugars. And now we got to stay awake. We get to test our own personal resolve, whether we're going to be able to focus and stay awake. Somebody told me yesterday, they said, why did they pick you to go after lunch on Sunday? And I said, I don't have any idea. And they said, well, I can think of two reasons. Either one, they thought you would keep everybody awake, or two, they didn't really care what you had to say. So if you slept, it wasn't that big of a deal. Well, I hope it's the former. I don't really know. So we're going to be talking this afternoon about serving together as a family, ways that we can serve together, what that looks like, how we can do that. Interestingly enough, one of the first scripture references that they had that they gave to me, and I'm glad they did because I don't know if I would have connected it. It needs to be connected, but I don't know if I'd have connected it, was Matthew chapter 25. And I'm not going to turn and read that because I think we're familiar enough with that to understand that's where Jesus is teaching about the end of time and the judgment day, and he talks about separating the sheep and the goats, and to the ones on the left, or ones on the right, we'll start there, to the sheep. He says, you knew me when I was in prison, when I was hungry, when I was thirsty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what did you do? What did they do? I'm going to make you answer questions to help keep you awake. What? They took care of them. They did something. Then the ones on the left, they ask, well, when did we see you in those situations? I don't think we saw you. You weren't there. And what was his response to them? You didn't do anything. You should have done it. When you saw anybody in that situation, you should have done it. If we know that to be the standard that Jesus has of service to him, when we see a need or see a situation that we have the ability to help out with, that we're supposed to take action and do that, if that is the standard that Jesus has for me, then isn't that the same standard that he would have for my children? It's not going to change. It's not going to change. That was the standard he had for my parents and for my grandparents and for my great-grandparents all the way back. And it's going to be the same standard he has for generations to come, however long the world stands. It's not going to change. So it's up to me to not only uphold that standard, but also to pass along that standard to my children. So that got me thinking about, that's what Jesus said when he was walking on the earth. When we go to Revelation chapter 20, if you start looking in Revelation chapter 20, starting in 11 through 15, he's showing John what the judgment scene is going to look like. It's not a parable. It's a prophecy. It's a prediction. This is what it's going to be. And John says he sees the nations, all the people in the world, small and great, gathered at the throne of God. Books are opened and the book of life is opened. And all of these people are judged based on what? Their works. What was written in the books and what based on what they did. Based on what they did. And that's emphasized. In verse 12, he says, and the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. In verse 13, and they were judged according, each one according to his works. What we do matters. So how do we pass that on to our kids? How do we make that something that we can pass on from one generation to the next? In Acts chapter 20 and verse 35, Paul said this when he was trying to get to Jerusalem. He wanted to talk to the church at Ephesus, but he was afraid if he went up there, it's going to take way too much time than what he had. We've all been there, right? You want to stop and see somebody, you're going to stop for 5 minutes and just say hi. 2 hours later, you're pulling out of the driveway. Okay? It's just the way we as human beings are. So Paul is concerned that if he goes to Ephesus, he's not going to get away in time to get to Jerusalem. So he calls for the elders, right? I'll tell the elders and let them pass on the information. And one of the things he tells them in Acts 20, verse 35, he says, I have shown you in every way. You notice the emphasis on how he did it? Now, didn't Paul talk to them about these things? Didn't he teach them about the, he used words. He used examples. But this time he points out, I have shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak. And then he says, and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, what? It's more blessed to give than receive. Why tell the elders at Ephesus this? Why point this out to them? There's all kinds of things he could tell them. Why emphasize to them the fact that it is more blessed to give than to receive by quoting Jesus? To add emphasis to the words he's saying, to add weight. Because the elders were supposed to lead the church. And if the elders were to lead the church in this manner, then the church in turn would lead the next generation in this manner. They were to set an example for the church to follow, and parents are to set an example for their children to follow. So what is the importance of the mother and father's service to the Lord? Why is that important? Just briefly, Genesis chapter 18, verse 19. This is God talking about Abraham. Of all the people in all the world, why choose Abraham? God had a reason. He doesn't do things randomly without a purpose. He had a reason to pick Abraham. And this is one part of the reason. God says in Genesis 18, 19, for I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring Abraham what he has spoken to him, that they may keep the way of the Lord and do righteousness and justice. Do that. Not just teach it, not just talk about it, not just understand it, to do it. To in action be living rightly, righteousness. And in action be showing and acting on having mercy to those that need mercy and justice. To do that in work and in action. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 17, to Abraham's descendants, God says, you will diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, his testimonies and his statutes, which he has commanded your fathers. Diligently keep the commandments of the Lord. And Jesus, when he was here on the earth, was asked about those commandments. What is the greatest commandment? And what did he say? Love the Lord God with everything you've got. And by the way, the second is what? Love your neighbor as yourself. So loving God with everything you've got and then loving your neighbor as yourself. Treating your neighbor like you treat yourself. Treating your neighbor like you'd want to be treated. The golden rule. This is so important that God says you're supposed to teach your children to keep my commandments. And then Jesus says, here's the most two important ones, because everything else goes back to those two. Love your neighbor as yourself. Treating people with respect, helping out somebody that's in need. That's all part of this loving your neighbor as yourself. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, Jesus says we're supposed to be what two things in the world? Salt and light. Boy, I'm making you think after lunch, aren't I? Salt and light. Salt so that we have that influence that salt has on food. It preserves, it flavors, it seasons, it does all these great things for us. Yes, I know, high blood pressure too. But salt is good for us, right? We have to have a certain amount of salt. We're supposed to be that kind of influence on the world. And then as lights, we're supposed to be known to be that kind of an influence on the world. It's not supposed to be done in the darkness, in the corner someplace. Yes, we're supposed to do our good deeds, in some cases in secret, so that the reward, the benefit goes to God, not to us. That's the goal. But we're also supposed to be known to be lights in the community, to be beacons of Jesus' love. Here's the question that we're trying to address this afternoon. Yes, we know we're supposed to do that. Do our children see us do that? Do our children notice? Are we teaching our children the same way Paul says he taught those people in Ephesians, by them watching him do those things? By them seeing him do that? Do they see us, or are those just words? Are those just things we talk about on Sunday morning, Wednesday night, and Sunday night? Are those just things we say? Exodus chapter 2 and verse 11. This is interesting to me. This is Moses was born, right? We know the story. We've told it to our kids, hopefully, a lot. Moses was born. He was put in the basket by his mother when she couldn't hide him any longer. Pharaoh's daughter comes and finds him. He's raised in the king's household, in the Pharaoh's household there in Egypt. But who was taking care of him in his younger years? His mother. His sister managed to figure out how to get mom involved in his life when he was young, as a nursemaid. And in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11, "Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown," this is much later, "when Moses was grown, that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens." So he went out among the Egyptians and looked at the things they were having to suffer. Who were his brethren that is being talked about? The Israelites, the Hebrews. Well, if he was brought up in Pharaoh's household, how did he know that the Hebrews were his brethren? His mother. His mother taught him. And he understood the burden that they were under, the slavery that they were being subjected to. The rest of that verse, "And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren." He knew the difference. And he knew that one was mistreating the other, and he needed to stand up for his brother, not for the Hebrew, for his brother. How valuable is being consistent in communication with the family? This is a question they directly ask me, and I wanted to read it. How valuable is being consistent in communication with the family about the work of the Lord in sharing, caring, and being with those of the faith? How important was it for Moses' mother to do that? Moses, I dare say, would not have been Moses if his mother had not done that, had not emphasized righteousness and doing good to others, and who was his brethren, and where he came from, and what was important. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, we know that verse. We're supposed to be a living sacrifice. A living sacrifice, not a reading sacrifice, or a talking sacrifice, or a telling sacrifice, or a lecturing sacrifice. We're supposed to be a living sacrifice. This is doing. We have to talk about it. We have to teach it. We have to read it. We have to learn it. But we have to do it. It can't stop at those things. We have to do it. We have to be a living sacrifice. If we truly live it, then our children will see it. And they'll learn even more if they're participants in it. If they're participants in it. You know, I know we have several people in here that are in the field of education. And I can remember when I was in college, you know, wide-eyed and going to change the world. And never, I'm going to be the greatest band teacher the world's ever seen. This is going to be great. And we're going through our education classes on methodology, and here's how you teach, here's the effective ways to teach. And we did our the learning pyramid, learning style pyramid. Anybody remember doing that in college? You're talking about kids and how they learn and the best ways they learn. You know what the best way that research has found for children to learn something? Hands-on, to do it, to be participant in it, to be active in experiencing it and learning it. You know what the worst way to learn is? Lecture. You know what was going on when I learned that? I was sitting in a lecture, being lectured on how lecturing was the worst way to learn something. Now, I have to give them credit. We did do some hands-on stuff to try to learn some of these principles, but I just found that ironic. And then I found it sad when, how is it that we learn most of what the world learns most about what they know about the Bible and religion? Lecture. It's the worst way to learn. If you're trying to teach your children something, yeah, you're going to have to lecture them sometimes. But that's the worst way to learn something. Do it with them. Take them with you. Have them participate. Have them be active in the learning process. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, 1 Samuel chapter 2, we have the account of a high priest by the name of Eli. You remember him? Eli. And Eli had some sons. The goal was that the sons would eventually take over for Eli in the priestly duties. They were already performing some of these. One of them was probably going to be high priest someday. That was the goal anyway. And so here they are participating in this, learning from Eli, doing things. But in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12, now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. Why did they not know the Lord? Now they're doing priestly things. We see that as they're going down through. They're going through the motions, doing priestly things, doing religious activities. But God says here, they did not know the Lord. Is it possible for our children to go through the motions but not know the Lord? Sadly, yeah. It is. It's possible. Whose fault was it that the children of Eli knew how to go through the process, how to do all the routine stuff, how to go through the motions, but did not truly know the Lord? Whose fault was that? Was that God's fault? Was that the other priest's fault? Was that the elders of the tribe of Levi's fault? That was Eli's fault. We've talked about that this weekend. It was Eli's fault. It was his responsibility to make sure not only that his children knew of the Lord, but that they knew the Lord. So they were supposed to be teaching the people to love God and to worship Him. But notice down in chapter 2, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 17. Therefore the sin of the young man was very great before the Lord. For men abhorred the offering of the Lord. Now sin is horrible in God's sight. We talk about this all the time. Murdering and lying are both sins. One's not greater than the other. But here, God uses the verbiage, their sin was very great before the Lord. Why was it very great before the Lord? Because not only were they sinning themselves, they were causing other people to sin, and they were causing other people to not want to worship God. They were bringing reproach on the name of the Lord. Our children will tend, whether we like it or not, they will tend to learn what we're teaching them. And then, as was said earlier, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. They will end up teaching the things they learned from us. And the cycle will continue. Eli did not teach his sons to know the Lord, and they were not teaching the people to know the Lord. Psalm 127 is not a very long psalm, and when you start reading it, at first, it appears that it would be a psalm instructing city planners or kings that were building a kingdom. But as you get into it, it's much more personal than that, isn't it? Psalm 127, verse 1. There's only five verses. I'm going to read the whole thing. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sheep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They will not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gates. This is all about training up our children. That's what it is. It's if we're not teaching our children correctly, we're wasting our time staying up late worrying about them, doing with less so that they can have more. That's all in vain, God says. It's a waste of time because it means nothing if they don't learn to love God. We would do well to pay attention to how we are building our family. And we've talked a lot about different aspects of that this week. But let's think about the idea of serving together. There are blessings and benefits when we serve. We're told that in the Scriptures. And if you've ever done anything in this way, if you've ever volunteered for some group, if you've ever helped out a family that was down on their luck, if you've ever sat with an individual that is despondent because of some tragedy that just happened in their life, if you've ever done any of those things, you know and understand personally what a great reward it can be to feel like you had something to do with helping that person or that situation out. How much greater would that blessing be if, when possible, your children are along? Now, I do understand the concept, and I've been in these situations where it either just was not safe, was not practical, or was not a good situation to have my children along when I was working with someone or working with a certain situation. But when you can have your children along and help you do something like that, it's a wonderful thing. The family is strengthened through that. The family is strengthened through that. When you are doing something to help out another person, and you take your child along with you, or your children, plural, along with you to do that, to whatever that is. You're buying groceries for somebody, so you take them with you, buy the groceries, and then deliver them to that person. Whatever it is, when you allow them to help you in that process, the family is strengthened because they see what loving your neighbor means. If it's just helping your elderly neighbor cut the grass or trim some trees or clean out the gutters, If it's getting somebody a ride to a doctor or the hospital, whatever it is, if they can help you with that in some way, you're not just telling them what it means to love your neighbor as yourself, you're showing them. And they're participating in it, which is the best way to learn something. They're participating in it. Knowing and understanding through this process what doing the right thing is can help prevent thinking and doing the wrong thing on their own later. It's setting them up to be able to think things through and reason things through and make good decisions, which we've also talked about. Our goal is that they can do this stuff without us. They can do this stuff without us. Also, if they're helping somebody else out when they're in a time of need, guess what's going to happen to them at some point in their life eventually? They're going to have a struggle. They're going to have some difficulty. They might be in need, but they're definitely going to have some sort of struggle or difficulty. And when that struggling and suffering comes, they know that their brethren and their family can be relied upon to help them out. And there's not going to be any strings attached. They just know, and it can help them through their own struggle or suffering. All of those can lead to that child becoming a successful servant and leader in the church. And I'm not just talking about the guys when I talk about a leader in the church. We all know strong women that in their way and in their place, properly, they lead within the church. That didn't happen by accident. I'll guarantee you almost every single one of them had either a mother or a grandmother or another sister in the church that they looked up to, that they learned that from. And they probably helped them do that in some way. So what are some of the ways that a family can serve in their community to be an example for non-believers? Because it's important for us to show the light to the world, not just among our brethren. Well, there's all kinds of ways. There's no way I could stand up here and give you a long list. It's going to require you to figure out how you can serve. Because there's going to be ways that you can serve in your area or in your community or with your talents or gifts that I would not think of. But the easiest one that we think of is any kind of formal volunteering to help somebody that's struggling. It could be a group. It could be a food center. It could be a soup kitchen. It could be anything. Any way that there's a formal group that formally helps this certain group in society, and they sign up to help out, and you sign up to help out. Go with them. Take them with you. But it doesn't have to be formal, does it? Just assisting a neighbor. Seeing a need in your neighborhood or among your family or in your community that needs to be done, somebody needs help with. Maybe it's a neighbor that doesn't have children at home anymore. Maybe it's an elderly neighbor that doesn't have children or grandkids in the area that you can help do something. Maybe it's somebody that's down on their luck financially, that's having struggles or problems, and there just doesn't seem to be anybody around to help. Here's an idea. Ask your kids to be on the lookout for something like that. That's something I thought of during prepping for this lesson that I have to admit I didn't do. I wish I'd have thought of that years ago. Look, we want to try to help somebody in the community. Would you keep your eyes out and see if there's somebody you know of? Maybe there's somebody that they know at school, that their contact with them at school, or they have a job and their contact with them in their workplace is going to allow them to know something about that person that maybe nobody else in the community knows, and it's going to be a way that you as a family can help that other individual or family. Get them involved in assisting neighbors or friends or people they know. Help them understand that their example at school is just like the parents' example at work. I don't know how many times I've told this to my kids. School is your job right now. School is your job right now. You work hard, you be an example, you shine your light in school, because other adults, we have to shine our lights at work. We have to be the example at work. Language, work ethic, respect for authority, trustworthiness, these are all godly principles that are part of shining our light and serving others, that they need to understand that that's their job. They can do that wherever they are, whether it's a school or whether they actually do have a job, that they need to be involved in that. We've talked a lot about parents, but grandparents can have a tremendous role in this area. Grandparents can have a tremendous role. There's a good chance they probably have a little more time than the parents do. Now, I know many retired people that they have less time than they had when they were working full time. But you know what? I know a lot of retired people that the reason they're so busy is they're out helping other people. They're doing things for them. They're assisting where they have a talent or an ability. And that's their service. And you know what? Those grandparents that I know, I'm thinking of a couple of different families in particular. That grandparent is out there helping and serving and working, and the children and the grandchildren of those individuals, they know that. They go along and help with them sometimes, but they know that that's what they're doing. And guess what those children and grandchildren tend to do a lot of? Helping. Not for money, not for glory, not for fame, not for the pat on the back, just because it's the right thing to do. Because they want to help. They've been trained to think that way. They're more likely, the grandparents are more likely to have fewer responsibilities at a job, if any, if they have a job at all. And that's going to give them more time. I learned a lot from my parents, and I'm grateful for that. But I am eternally grateful for the example that my grandparents gave me and that I saw in them. Things I was able to learn from them, the influence that they had on my life, spending time with them in the summer on the off-school months, working alongside with them doing things, being called out by them. Grandparents, don't be afraid to parent a little bit. I can think of instances, all four of my grandparents, maybe this is more of a testimony to me than to them, but I can think of times all four of my grandparents at different times in their lives called me on the carpet for something. Pointed out something to me I needed to change or fix. I needed that. And there's probably a couple of those situations that I don't know, if maybe my parents didn't recognize it, maybe parents didn't realize it. I know as a parent, guess what? What was it? I heard a comedian say one time, the older I get, the smarter my parents become. Because the more I understand about parenting, the more I realize my parents were pretty good parents, and my grandparents were pretty good parents. And as a grandparent, you can have that influence. Don't be afraid to call them out for something. In 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5, Paul is talking about Timothy to Timothy. He's reminding him of his upbringing. I know you know this passage. And Paul says, I want you to remember. I call to your remembrance. I want you to think about the genuine faith that is in you, that was first in who? Your grandmother and your mother. Your grandmother and your mother. And look what Timothy was. In Acts chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, talking about Paul's travel that he was on, when he came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek. he was well spoken of by the brethren at Lystra and Iconium. This young man had a reputation not just within his own community, but within others. He was well spoken of and well known. In Acts chapter 17, verse 14, Paul is leaving the city of Berea, but he leaves Silas and Timothy there for a time to continue the work. In Acts chapter 18, verse 5, they catch back up with Paul in Corinth, but then in chapter 19, verse 22, Timothy and Erastus are sent off into Macedonia because Paul's running short on time. His mother and his grandmother taught him the faith. They didn't just talk it to him. He learned to love God. We need to do that with our own children. I want to turn your attention to Psalm 78. This was not planned in any way. In fact, I thought I was going to have to alter a few of my comments because this was brought out earlier. This is the first part of this psalm, first few verses. And Jay applied it to his topic. I think, Jay, weren't you the one that brought this up? Good. Sometimes my remember is not very good, but I was right. Good. So Psalm 78, and I'm going to reread the first part of that Jay read, but then for our purposes, we're going to go on down a little bit further. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. This is information that's being passed down. Verse 4. We will not hide them from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strengths and the wonderful works that He has done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel. Do you see the combination of things that we're told are going to be passed down from generation to generation? Yeah, there's laws. Yeah, there's commands. But look what else is in there. The wonderful works that God has done. The strength of the Lord. The testimony that He's established. Yeah, we have to teach them the commandments. We have to teach them the thou shalt nots, if you want to think of it that way. But please don't forget that we need to teach our children of the good things of the Lord. The blessings that He provides. The strength that He gives us. The things He does for us. And pass that on to our children and teach our children to express that to others through their service. Through shining their light and being salt. Let's keep going. Middle of verse 5. Which He commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. For what purpose? That the generation to come might know them, these commandments and these good things, the children who would be born. We're not talking about their kids. We're talking about kids that aren't born yet. Generations that aren't here. That they may arise and declare them to their children. We're passing on a legacy. Verse 7. That they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God. Not forget the works of God. You know, we looked at Eli and how God says about Eli's boys, they did not know God. Jesus says that very same thing to a group of scribes, religious doctors. He looks at them and He says, "You do not know God or His power." They could tell the stories. I don't think they totally believed them. They could quote the scripture. I don't think they'd taken it to heart. This is what He's talking about here. That they can know God. The power of God. The works of God. The might of God. The goodness of God. Verse 7, may not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments. And this is the hard part for me right here, verse 8. And may not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that did not set its heart aright and whose spirit was not faithful to God. You know why we're supposed to teach our children and show our children what service is and be an example to them? So they don't turn out like me. So they're better than I am. So they're better than my generation. And they're better than my parents' generation. And they're better than my grandparents' generation. You know, in the church, the last thing we should ever have to say is, boy, the church was better when I was younger. Boy, we should never have to say that. Because the one goal we have is to make the church better. To increase the church. To increase the body of Christ. To make them stronger. To make them more faithful. To make them more giving. To make them more serving. So that they can be better than me. Because I know me. And you know you. And we want our children and our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, the generations that are to come, to be better than me. Yes, this is about our children's future. Even more, it's about their children's future. We've had people speak this weekend that just have very small children. And we have had people speak that are kind of in the middle. Jay and I are kind of toward the end. He's older than I am, by the way. I've got 5 kids. I've got a boy and a girl that are married. I've got a boy and a girl that are not married. All 4 of them are out of high school, and I've got one left in high school. I've got one grandchild that's born and another one on the way. And I think about this verse. I think about this passage. What can I do and what can the church do today to make that generation greater than my generation? And not be able to look back and say, oh, what a great generation that was. Maybe that was a great generation, whatever generation you're thinking about in the past. Maybe that was a great generation. I'm sure they had people that loved God. I'm sure they had people that were service, in deep service to God. I know that they had people that knew God and loved Him. But can we make the next generation greater? Can we influence them to have greater service? To have greater love, to have greater knowledge. And I don't just mean the facts in the book. I mean to know God, to believe Him. Things that Jesus said the generation He was around of Jews did not know God. Ultimately, this is about all potential future generations. I don't know how long. I wonder, when Paul was making his travels, this is one I don't care if you answer out loud. I just want you to think about it because I think about it. How long do you think that he believed the world was going to exist? How long do you think he thought that the world was going to stand before Jesus came back? I can't answer that question exactly, but I think I can imply from some of the things he does, some of the things he teaches, some of the things he writes, I don't think he thought it was going to be very long. I don't know how long that was, but I'm almost 100% sure it was not 2,000 years. Did Paul understand that he was setting up the teachings and the examples that were going to be followed for 2,000 years of humanity? I don't think he did. So now we have to ask ourselves the question. Are we establishing enough of an example to our children that that example can be passed on for 2,000 years? Because we don't know how long the world's going to stand. Most of us probably tend to think it's probably not going to be around very much longer. So did Paul. What kind of an example and legacy are we leaving? We should have the singularly focused goal that the generations to come will be more godly, more righteous, more knowledgeable, more loving, more merciful, more forgiving than we ever were. That they will know God and the power of His might so that they can pass it on to their children. And that that legacy can continue as long as the world stands, even if it's another 2,000 years or more. The song that was picked for the invitation song is one of my favorites. I don't know if Neil knew that, but I'm pretty sure Neil didn't know what I was going to talk about exactly. But do you know Jesus? Do you know Him? Not can you quote the stories, not can you recite some of the things that He taught. Do you know Him? Do you know and understand His power, His wisdom, His goodness, His mercy, His love? Because all that's available. And if we can learn it, then we can teach it. And if we can teach it, then they can learn it. And if they can learn it, they can teach it. And that process can go on until as long as the world stands. Do you know Jesus? If you don't, it's time to learn. It's time to learn. Learn of His power. Learn of His might. Understand why we celebrated the communion this morning. Understand why we're gathering here today. Because we love God. And we want our children to love God so that their children love God. And so that together, all generations can serve God together. Today is the day that you want to become intimate with your Savior through knowing Him and His blood through baptism leading to salvation. And we invite you to come forward as we stand and as we sing.